The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
With me is Jen Cummins, Social Democrats TD for Dublin South Central, and Mark Hennessy, Ireland and Britain editor of the Irish Times. And it's appropriate that we have Jen with us because Jen's party leader in the Social Democrats has declared that Sinn Féin is insufficiently left-wing. This will come as a surprise to many in Sinn Féin, I think, Jen.
I think the left, people assume now that we're all the same. They assume that all the left parties, because we got behind Catherine, we're all the same, we all believe in exactly the same things. I mean, there'd be differences. You know, if there wasn't differences, we'd all be the one party, right? So,
But this seems to be a fair degree of attempted distancing. It's an interview that she has, Holly Cairns has given to the Irish Times, and she has pointed to a number of Sinn Féin's policies on tax and those kind of issues, and has said that they aren't really left-wing, that essentially they're fellow travellers with Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil.
Well, I think that there's some things that we may not necessarily agree on, you know, that we'd probably be a bit more left than maybe Sinn Féin would be. And I think that when you have a spectrum of politics, that happens.
And why now? Why do the interview to try to create that clear blue water? Was there a sense that you were getting amalgamated and subsumed?
But I think people are looking for an alternative, aren't they? I think the Catherine Connolly campaign really highlighted that there are people who are desperately seeking alternatives to what we currently have. And I think the Catherine Connolly campaign was a really good example of when people get behind an excellent candidate like Catherine, we are united behind her, and we were. And I mean, like, what a fantastic campaign. And so many people coming out now who were never involved in politics, who are now, you know, kind of maybe saying, OK, well, if this is what's it about, or you knock on doors, you do leaflets, you hang up posters, you get behind an excellent candidate, then let's do that. I think it's time to discuss things. I think it's time
Is there a slight resentment that maybe Sinn Féin stole your thunder? Because the Social Democrats were very much first movers in the support of Catherine Connolly, and then Sinn Féin threw their weight behind the campaign, and there was a sense that she became their candidate. Did you get squeezed out?
I don't think we got squeezed out at all. I think we were very firmly behind Catherine from day one. I think it allowed her to get out very early in the campaign and allowed her cover such an amount of ground that she did. And I think us being there from the very beginning was so important, as was as many other people behind her. So whether that's maybe Before Profit or Labour or Sinn Féin or Independence, I think it was really important to be behind them. I don't think we were overshadowed by anyone. I think actually what we really, and it's not about that, it's about Catherine at the end of the day. It's about everybody's focus should be on Catherine and was on Catherine. And, you know, I think everybody was so supportive of her, and I think we were supportive of one another. And I think on the ground, and this is the reality, on the ground, on her campaign, there was 15,000 people involved in that campaign. And the reality is that they went out every single day, hours and hours, canvassing, postering, leafleting, you know, singing her praise, talking about why they should vote, people should consider voting for her. So behind all that is a groundswell of people who were working so well. And that ground campaign was cross-party and, you know, worked really, really well. Okay. So I think that's the focus it should be.
Is there an issue in this for the left generally, Mark, in that we saw a much more cohesive approach on a number of things, the most recent being the presidential campaign, the first probably being the speaking rights route, where the left got together and took on the government in a way that they hadn't in the previous Dáil. Is it now becoming a challenge for some of the smaller parties like the Social Democrats that they don't get rolled up into a Sinn Féin-led alliance?
Yeah, absolutely. That's undoubtedly. And it's a question of, you know, see these Christians and how they love one another. I mean, that's the essential nature of politics. And the Social Democrats do have some grounds for being irritated by the fact that the Sinn Féin has taken so much credit for Catherine Connolly's election. We can argue the toss about that. But at the end of the day, the Social Democrats were in first. And that did matter at the time it mattered. But I'm old enough to remember the declarations of the 70s will be socialist, and we saw where that went. So, you know, the idea that we have a guaranteed political path in front of us that we can clearly predict is open to question. I mean, the public has long had a sense of voting for self-interest in the Dáil and wanting to put a conscience in the Oras. We'll see whether that follows through. There's a better chance that it will follow through this time.
And the poll numbers are strong. I mean, the poll numbers for Sinn Féin are strong. The Social Democrats, albeit small by comparison, have been doing well.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, set against the social backdrop that we're talking about in terms of housing and all of the other issues, this is the best chance that the parties of the left are ever, ever going to have. And, but, you know, it requires a certain degree of not unity amongst them, because they are appealing to different elements within society. And Jen is right that, you know, the Sinn Féin and the Social Democrats are not the same politically, and they can't be expected to agree on all policies. Equally, they have to present an image as we get closer to the election, not now, but closer to the election. They have to give a picture to the Irish people that were they to be elected, that they would be coherent and that they would be able to run a shop.
Which in itself is a challenge, a Texas say, Jen. The fact that the left is so fractured is the reason why they'll never fully hold power. They attack each other while the centre-right parties slip into another government.
I think, you know, like what Mark is saying, when we go to the next election, it is about presenting what an alternative is. And I really do think the presidential election was in some way a protest to what is not happening, what the government parties went out and promised and promised and promised and then are not delivering. And I think people are so, I don't know why they're surprised, because this keeps happening. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, it happens again and again. And I suppose for people like me coming new to politics, you want to do the best for your community that you're representing. And it is very frustrating then when you see government parties and they're promising things before an election and then they get in and then they don't do it. It's like, come on, you know, we had our red line issues. We went in, we always say vote left, transfer left. We said we would talk to the parties of the left. We did. And, you know, the numbers were not there for us this time, but the numbers hopefully will be there the next time. And what we
and
want
will the
is
cohesion
to build a party.
Be there? I mean, is there enough capacity among the parties of the left to create a coherent, non-fracturing alliance?
I really would hope so. Like, I do think this campaign has given a lot of hope to people. I think a lot of discussions will need to happen. And I think that we need to look at what Catherine will bring to this country and showing what that would look like. There's a lot of fear out there, but we've a lot of people to convince yet. There's a lot of spoiled votes. We've a lot of people to convince.
Well, what's your take on the total message then from the presidential election? Because initially Tech saying we voted Connolly as the least worst candidate, not a shift to left-wing politics. Mm-hmm. This will become clear in the general election.
Mm-mm. I mean, I think people have said that. And I think this is the difficulty when there were so few people on the ballot paper. But this is what we're saying. If you want to be a presidential candidate, get out early. Don't leave it till the end. There isn't enough time. It's too competitive. And there's so much work that needs to be done.
But do you think what we saw was a shift left? Or do you think what we saw was people looked at the people on the ballot and decided that Catherine Connolly as an individual was the best of a bad lot?
Well, I have to say, from canvassing for Catherine, what I heard overwhelmingly was that people were so, so delighted to see her on the ballot paper, that they were 100% voting for her. And I remember there was one family who said there was a huge amount, over 30 people in the family, and they were all voting for Catherine. So there was a definite, we are voting for Catherine because she's the best candidate and she represents everything that we would like to have as well.
Are they all in the one house?
No, I don't think they're all in the same house. No.
But by best, I think in many cases, people did mean least worst. The two can be true at one and the same time. I mean, it was a lousy Fine Gael campaign. Fianna Fáil imploded. You had a shortage of candidates. You know, this was the best opportunity for somebody like Catherine Connolly to come through. You know, fair dues, the president-elect took the opportunities that were put in front of her. But there is...
And took them early.
And took them early, yeah. No, you know, some of this was it was on the back of advantages that would be difficult for any other candidate to uncover, you know, the sycophantic podcasts and all of that kind of stuff, where, you know, that wouldn't be available to any other candidate on the pitch. But nevertheless, you take what open doors you have as a candidate, and she took full advantage. There is always a danger in any election outcome for people in my trade or people in the world of politics to overanalyze the outcome. I'm not. It could be a signal of a really left wing drift in politics. I think that's true with the younger voters. I'm not sure that it's the same the older you get through the demographic. I think you get to a situation at a certain point where those people were voting for the least worst candidate rather than the best candidate, whereas I think a lot of the younger voters were voting with a certain political view in mind.
53106, if you want to get in touch, 087-1400-106 on WhatsApp. The former will cost you 30 cents. The latter is for free. Again, I think the left are reading too much into the Connolly election. I gave her my vote only because Sinn Féin didn't run a candidate specifically of their own. I would hold my vote from Sinn Féin if they got into a pact, let's say, with People Before Profit, which again goes to whether or not it is possible for the parties of the left to cohere effectively. Connolly was a protest vote against the government. The left are deluded if they really think that the majority of the Irish people would vote left come a general election. Well, by God, I mean, Sinn Féin is by a country mile the most popular party in the country by poll numbers currently, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. They're high up there. So it's interesting, I suppose, in between election cycles where polls are and where parties are. The only poll that really matters is the day of the election. Like, ultimately, you know, I think it's really, really important that we work. But I think for us as Social Democrats, what we really want to see, and I'm delighted that Holly's back, and I'm delighted that she is, you know, was on the late and it, you know, has her interviews today in the newspapers, because what she's saying is that as a party, we have doubled our parliamentary party. And what we want is to have, you know, build our party so that we can show an alternative to what's currently there. We are very clear in what we want. So, I think that's important.
Issues of political, but this time sort of geopolitics. Your paper, Mark Hennessy, reporting on page 2, Ireland may borrow a navy ship from the French. This is when we end up with the EU presidency, we are so insufficiently able to manage our own defence that we're going to have to park a French battleship in the Liffey.
Well, there's a French battleship, a frigate, the Britannia, which is going to dock in Dublin this month on a courtesy visit, and it's equipped with anti-aircraft missiles. So they're considering doing something similar during the presidency proper.
But they're not doing it as a diplomatic mission. They're doing it because it is handy to have anti-aircraft guns. I mean, it is there as a defensive tactic, isn't that what?
Well,
not now, but during the presidency.
But during the presidency, they're certainly considering this. They're fast tracking the purchase of drones and stuff like that. This is one of these neuralgic issues in Irish public life, because if anybody speaks about the need for greater defense spending, you are accused of wanting to send troops from Mullingar into parachuting into Moscow. And, you know, we do have to, you know, begin to grow up. Most people here, and I say this with the greatest of respect, have absolutely no understanding of the level of contempt that exists for the Irish position on some of these issues. Not about neutrality. That's not the issue in many ways.
Contempt from whom?
You talk to Eastern Europeans and you talk to the way in which they read the messages that they get from Ireland, and they have no opinion about how much we're spending on defence. Well, they do have opinions on that, but they've no opinions on about us joining NATO or anything else. They're not interested in any of that. But the idea of listening to lectures from Michael D. Higgins about the amount of money that they're spending on defence when they're living in the shadow of Moscow, that is the bit that they find absolutely nauseous. Now, you know, we do need to...
But is their nausea reason enough for us to increase our spending?
Well, we have issues. It isn't about investing. We have an agreement with the British that we don't talk about. There's a court case about it. Our airspace will be protected by the Royal Air Force in the event of crisis. Now, we can argue the toss as to, you know, what would such a crisis be likely or possible or anything else.
But the RAF has already on multiple occasions been actually called in to do that with Russian planes.
That's in Irish airspace. And this is about being over Irish territory, land territory, in the event of a crisis. Where the biggest threat that we have is that there are so many undersea cables coming through into Irish waters that are absolutely critical, not just for the existence of Irish industry and banking and FDI and all of the stuff that's based here, but for everybody else, going to the US, going to Europe and everything else. And a major point of weakness for those is within Irish waters. And the Russians are up to no good. We've seen what they've done in the Baltics and elsewhere. There is a need for us to hold up our end of the shop on stuff like long-range drones and all of that kind of thing. So it isn't the question of creating an expeditionary force so that we can invade Belarus. It is about doing certain things that we need to do for our own defence. There's a difference between being neutral and being defenceless.
At what point, Jen, does it become embarrassing when you have to get the British to protect the airspace and the French to protect the seas?
Well, my understanding is that we used to have 8 Navy ships, vessels. Now we have 2, and because we don't have enough to staff it, that actually 1 is only possible. I do think we do need to be able to defend ourselves. If an expert group are saying that we have the presidency that we need, you know, additional support, then okay. I mean, we've constantly said in our party that, you know, the defence forces are under-resourced. There's a retention and recruitment challenge, you know, so I do think we have to have a conversation about it, and I think we need to have an adult
conversation.
I know, but like, could we make decisions as well? Do you know what I mean? There's a lot of chat sometimes, and there's not a lot of decisions, and show some leadership on it.
But what are the sort of decisions you would want? I mean, the kind of things, should we be in a position to defend our own airspace and not require the RAF? Should we go back to having 8 cutters available to the Navy? I mean, have the Social Democrats as a party got a sense of this is what we would like to see in terms of national defence?
I think we need to look at how do we defend ourselves, what the position of neutrality, the situation with staffing and resources. If we are not able to defend ourselves, this puts us at risk. And my understanding is that other countries are not happy with that position either. So the Social Democrats, you know, Sinead Gibney is our spokesperson, and she's very clear on that. If we don't resource it, we won't be in a position to do anything.
But resource it how?
With staffing, with ships. If we had 8, why do we only have 2 now? Why are they being decommissioned? What's the policy on that? What's the, you know, what's the decision on that? So I would like to see that government are able to make decisions properly, and that they do them and they implement them. And we actually do have, if we're supposed to have 8 ships, then have 8 ships. If we're supposed to have infrastructure that protects our airspace, then we should have that. But if we are not, and they were just ignoring that, at some stage, you know, we will find ourselves in a situation where it is dangerous.
But this goes to your point, Mark, of the thing of the difference between being neutral and being defenceless. It'll be a brave government who actually takes any of the financial steps to do any of this.
Well, I mean, there are actions taken already in terms of increasing spending, but, you know, they're at the foothills of probably what we will need in the years to come. And this
if you look at Finland by comparison, I mean, a country of more or less the same population. Now, obviously, their experience is radically different.
Yeah.
But the level of self-defense capacity they have compared to us is vast multiples.
Well yeah, but it leaches into every element of society. I mean, you go to Helsinki and you sit around a table with people who are in business, and you'll find that every single one of them are in the reserve defense forces, and all of them have been out on patrols, and all of them have done tactical exercises and all the kind of stuff. You can imagine what sort of response you'd get here if you tried to get people to sign up for stuff like that. You know, so we are being incredibly immature about some of this stuff. And as I say, any time that anybody says anything where you say we do need to be paying more attention, you're accused of being a warmonger or whatever. I'm not talking about being in favour of joining NATO. I would be unwilling to spend money on defence, because clearly if you spend it on defence, it's not available for something else. And I'm not even in favour of putting in, you know, 5 squadrons of fighters in Baldonnel. I mean, if we have an agreement with the British to cover stuff like this, then fine. We don't need to spend everything on everything. But there are bits that we do need to do, and we do need to hold up our end of the shop. And we're already finding examples where within the European community that our credibility on this issue is damaging other stuff. And you hear chatter coming from some elements of government that if you're going around the Council of Ministers table trying to get support on some issue that has absolutely nothing to do with defence, that you're now beginning to meet some resistance and irritation from people saying, well, kind of folks, you know, why should we be helping you lot? You know, we are getting a bit of a reputation for being the one who's in the corner lecturing everybody else And that's a very dangerous place for a small country to be.
A text saying, we still have 8 ships, only 2 can go to sea due to crewing and maintenance issues, and none of them have air defence capabilities. 53106 if you want to send us a text. That'll cost you 30 cents, or 087 1400 106 if you want to use WhatsApp. The front page of the Irish Daily Mail is reporting that there is a faith healer whose prayers were sought by DJ Carey while he was actively conning people, who is saying that he is going to help DJ turn his life around if he gets the opportunity. This, of course, being further analysis of all of the fallout and sequelae from the DJ Carey verdict and subsequent sentencing. And there's a lot of coverage about it and a lot of analysis and a lot of discussion about just the brazen nature of what DJ Carey did for so as long as he did it. It's sort of hard to wrap your head around that he ever thought he was going to get away with it.
Yes, you know, but if you are conning people with the experience of fellas like Dennis O'Brien, then clearly one was rather good at doing it. And equally, if you're coming in and you're telling people that you are sick, the natural instinct of most people, you know, and most people are decent, is to feel sympathy for the person who is in trouble. You know, but when
but
you're...
some of it was so badly done. I mean, there's a letter, he purports to have a letter from his doctors in the US that said something to him, you are the talk of our colleagues and staff and the faculty, your bravery and charity. I think, come on.
Well, I mean, it all goes into us. There's clearly a degree, I'm no psychiatrist, but there's clearly a degree of self-obsession and narcissism about this stuff, you know. You're dealing with somebody who reached sporting heights that, you know, would be impossible for 99.9% of us to even imagine. And then your career is over and, you know, life afterwards looks an awful lot more dull.
Surely there's a better way, though, to parlay having been DJ Carey into finance.
No, of course.
There has to be a way to use that to positive, you know.
Of course, I mean, there was a business career, there was all sorts of things that could have been done, but there are clearly, you know, deep issues. And he is going to struggle very seriously in prison. I mean, this doesn't strike me as being somebody who is going to cope well with any of that experience.
What do you think of the sentence, Jen?
I mean, I think it's the whole thing is quite shocking, actually. Do you know, you wonder, like what you're saying, how did he come about this idea? Why did he do this? And, you know, the deception that occurred for people is very, I mean, very shocking, really. And, you know, there's not a family in this country who isn't touched by cancer. So I suppose if somebody comes to you and says, look, I'm seriously ill, but I'm seriously in debt, you'd want to help them. The human in us wants to help others. That's how it is. So playing on that is, I'd love to know why, how did he come up with this idea? Why did he do that? But
about the pathology, though, of me, of somebody who thinks, now that I've met you, I'll befriend you, get to know you, earn your trust, that I can tap you up and rip you off. I mean, it's
spectacular. But then the people that people loved him and people wanted to do the best for him, and he was so well known. So, you know, he used that to his advantage. And, you know, I think it's terribly sad. It's a terribly sad situation, you know, because then those people who were deceived, then the lack of trust that they have in people, and also the lack of money, you know what I mean? Some people, a lot of money, you know, that's the shocking thing.
And for some of the India, some can afford it, some very much can't.
Some can't.
No, absolutely not. But it does show you as well, and maybe it's not just a Kilkenny thing in this case. So many, you hear afterwards, so many people knew stories about Carey that are only now beginning to come to light. And in some cases, you couldn't speak out because you couldn't speak ill of DJ Carey. You know, otherwise you'd pay a price locally in Kilkenny probably, because that's the sort of thing that's happened. We're a terrible country for secrets, you know.
Although surely that's common beyond the, I mean, if you look at what happened even with the Harvey Weinstein case, once the first person spoke up, there was a dam burst followed.
Yeah.
So I think that may be a natural pattern, isn't it?
No, except that. But Harvey Weinstein is in a different kind of a social circle and everything else to somebody living in Gowran, you know? There are stories in parishes and towns that people knew about, but for a whole variety of reasons, we go shtum. And I'm saying we, I'm not, you know, saying they, we go shtum in these kind of situations because people just don't want to talk. And then we all act surprised when somebody else gets caught down the line.
53106, if you want to get in touch, 087-1400-106. One last thing before we wrap up. It is being widely reported, a lot of coverage for it, that Vogue Williams is going to be going into the jungle. I think this is a euphemism for taking part in I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. Jen, will you be glued to her in it?
Well, my daughter has told me several times when it's starting, so we're going to be watching it. The difficulty being a politician is sometimes you don't get home in time to watch any TV until...
The player. You don't
have to watch it on the player.
Get it later online.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think people will watch it. I think it's interesting and we'll see. I mean, you know, people are glued to programmes like this. It's coming into the winter now. There's, you know, it's expensive to go out. I presume they'll watch it and I'm sure she'd be very entertaining and... You know, I think people will watch it. I think they will.
I suspect as well she'd also be very well remunerated for her experience in the jungle, because I understand that you get paid a fortune to do it.
I think Farage got paid $1 million, I think,
according
to some of the reports. I don't know her, never met her, but she's a sharp tack, you know. Mm.
What would your number be, Mark? What would, for us to get you to go to the jungle in Australia, would six figures do it or would we have to cross into the million?
You couldn't afford me.
I've been in the jungle in Australia. It's not pleasant.
Mark Hennessy, Ireland and Britain editor of the Irish Times. Jen Cummins, Social Democrats TD for Dublin South Central. Thank you both very much.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.